Chapter 18 of Green Grey Homestead by Steele Rudd. This Legamus recording may be distributed and adapted freely for any purpose. Read by Anna Simon. Bringing home a cow with a young calf is different to bringing home a friend to dinner. It's one of the things the government didn't tell you about when informing you of the richness of the soil, the salubrity of the climate, the heavy rainfall, and other happy conditions that would surround your green-grey homestead. But you'll get to know about it all in good time. And one day, when in the middle of the ploughing, and you are going for dear life to finish before the ground gets too hard, and when there's a paddock of lucerne waiting to be cut before the leaf falls, and a couple of chains of broken fence to be mended, and the roof of the barn to be pitched a couple of feet higher, and the building to be made bigger, and, according to the agricultural experts, 100 acres of bush hay to be cut as a stand-by for a rainy day. The Grogan kids will come tearing home from school, after losing your newspaper on their way, and a letter you've been waiting for months with a cheque in it for the sale of pigs, to tell you that Mr. Jerry Moriarty told his boys to tell them to tell you that when he was out on the commonage he saw a red cow of yours with a white back, and it had a young calf sucking her, and that if you don't go out soon and get her, someone else will and brand the calf. "A red cow with a white back," you'll repeat, shaking your head doubtingly. "No, you'll be sure he's making a mistake. But the kids were certain that Mr. Moriarty said it was a red cow with a white back, and that she had your brand on, and had a young calf, and was yours. Then you'll think a lot, recalling the colour and image of every beast ever you owned, and letting them pass in procession through your mind as if it was a dip, till at last you'll feel you're being offered a live cow and calf for nothing, and don't like to take them. Yet, somehow, you'll get a better opinion of Jerry Moriarty's knowledge of cattle than you had before, and you'll reckon it would be hard for him, who's always riding about the bush and knows everyone's brand, and is more interested in other people's stock than he is in his own, to make an error of that kind. Also, in your heart you'll feel she can't belong to you, no matter what her brand is. Still, you won't want to convince yourself quite that she's not your property, for if she's not yours, whose can she be? So you'll ponder and reason with yourself until you've finished the milking, and the Grogan kids have found the paper and the letter with the cheque in it. But after you've fed the poddies and fallen out with a couple of them for bunting into you as if you were their mother and had teats hanging all around you, you'll get a brainwave. You'll remember that when you put your little herd out on the commonage after buying feed for them all through the last big drought, and went to muster them after the rain came, that some were missing. You reckoned they were dead. You were surprised they weren't all dead. And among them was a little red heifer with a white back, not much larger than a dog, that you'd reared on the bucket. "Cripes, that must be her," you'll chuckle, slapping yourself on the leg. "Grown into a cow and got a calf." Then you'll be off, hot foot, to the house, calling out to the dog and calling yourself a goat. There'll be no ploughing for you that day. You're on to Newcham after breakfast and off to the commonage. The plough horses will stand at the fence watching you going with approving eyes. They'd rather meet you in the saddle than between the handles of the plough. Before you're out of sight of the homestead, you'll meet Wilkins on his way to the factory, and you'll stop to tell him where you're going. He'll say, "Yes," and, "You don't tell me," while filling his pipe from your tobacco and squinting at you through a fly veil. And when he's lit his pipe and is just going to drive on again, he'll say, "Nearly all of mine died out on that blasted place. But now on what you've been telling me, perhaps some of them's alive yet, too." And at the factory he'll spread the news that heifers of yours that died on the commonage in the big drought have all come to life again, and have got calves, and that you've gone out to bring them all in to milk. Before noon it'll be known all around the country, and talked of round dinner tables, and there'll be some who'll feel pleased to hear that someone's having a bit of luck, even if they are not themselves, and some who won't. The commonage, you'll find, isn't laid out like an experimental farm. It's a large area of waste range country, hurled over with rocks and fallen timber and precipices, and with a big hell-hole and a little hell-hole occupying most of the area, country that early squatters despised, and so was dedicated by government to the Shire Council for the use of small settlers, township people, horse-planters and cattle-duffers. The township people use it when they want firewood, or when they have an old horse or a cow that's likely to die on their hands and run up a bill for their being dragged out of the town and burned, and horse-planters use it all the year round for improving the breed of other people's horses. There will be no gate or slip-rails to the commonage, and the only boundary lines ever it had were surveyors' marks cut into trees, and most of the trees you'll find have been cut down for bees' nests and slabs and fencing-posts. You'll know it, when you're on it, by the abundance of bleached bones and scattered horns lying about, and the knee-caps and knuckle-bones shining on the ridge sides and in all the hollows will look like crops of mushrooms. It'll be a good season, too, following the drought, and though there will be little real grass, there will be plenty of vegetation and herbage and green bushes, and the tree-clad ridges will be heavily decked with blossoms and drugged with the drowsy humming of locusts. And, of course, there'll be birds of bright plumage chortling and fluttering in the trees, but as you won't be looking for material to split poetry out of, and won't belong to a sketch-club or a nature-study society, you'll not have much of an eye or an ear for parrots and peewees and the like, except maybe wonga pigeons or scrub turkeys, which you could eat, if you had a gun. And you won't be there to collect beetles and bones for the museum either, or to see if the kangaroo brings its joey into the world same as cats and cows and realistic artists do, or if it brings it to light through a pouch. So you'll ride ahead over ridges and in and out of hollows, with nothing in your head but a red cow with a white back, and you'll strain for sight of her in places where there'll be no cows of any colour, or bulls or steers either, till your head aches and your eyes feel sore. Your great hope will be to come across her on the tableland, such as it will be, for you'll have no wish to go down into the big hell-hole, or little hell-hole, in search of her. You've been down in those holes more than once, and prayed to the Almighty for guidance all the time you were trying to get out of them again. And as the search goes on, what an imaginative mind you'll have! Every animal that reveals itself to you, camped in the undergrowth, or meditating under a tree, or scratching itself against a stump, will seem to be a red cow with a white back, and will start your heart jumping till you get right on to it. And those that will be lying down with anything like a red skin, you, of course, will stir up and have a look at their brand. And some of them, lying down chewing the cud, and dreaming of grass in seasons long gone by, will be hollow-eyed, scaly, whip-marked, old working bullocks that will take a lot of stirring up, too. You'll work your way round a big mountain to a flat above the springs, where once there was an old station-yard and a slab hut with auger holes bored in it, big enough to hold a gun-barrel, a hut used by the squatters when the blacks were said to be bad, and later by horse-planters to camp in when it rained, when you'll catch sight of a mob of cattle through the tree-tops. A track little wider than a plank will take you round the mountain, and the short-cuts it will make on the broken sides and stiff climbs will fill you with pride for the bovine as a pathfinder. You'll be about to descend the last pinch, your eyes will be bursting, and your heart thumping, at sight of the mob of all colours, grazing peacefully over on a flat. Suddenly, with a start, Newcham will stop, his ears pricked, and he will stare hard. You'll get a start, too, for a horseman will be scratching and grunting his way up to meet you. He'll be a grizzly-faced old chap with a bumper of white whiskers, and seemingly born in Solomon's time. And he'll be astride an old brown cob, once a great horse, and still as game as a jumper-ant. When the old chap, riding loose as Oxford bags, and wearing a spur on one of his heels, and the remains of a cabbage-tree hat on his head, struggles to the top of the pinch where you'll be waiting, he'll want to know things.
"What the devil are you blocking the track for? Can't you get out the way of a man's horse? Isn't the mountain wide enough for you?"
Then you'll grin, and ask him did he see a red cow with a white back anywhere that's got a young calf.
"Did I see what?"
he'll yell, waving a waddy at you that he's carrying in place of a whip. You'll ask him again, and he'll grunt,
"Ah, don't I want all the eyes I have to see me own beasts without seeing other people's? What's that back there looking up at you but a red cow with a white back? Are you a new chum? Gone with you."
And on he'll shuffle, scrambling up and up and round that wind-haunted old mountain, while you look after him and think of Jim Marston's old dad in robbery under arms. Then you'll take the track again and corkscrew down off that pinch. There, looking at you, as the old chap said, will be a red cow with a white back. How your heart will jump and your blood tingle! Gosh! You'll ride round and round her while she'll turn and turn, keeping an eye on you, and wondering what your game is, for cows, like humans, are suspicious of strangers. She'll be a youngish cow, in full milk, and not long being sucked. That must be her, right enough, but you'll want to see the brand, for until you do, you'll feel like a cove with a quid on a horse that's half a length in front, but has five or six more lengths to go to win. As if to oblige you, she'll turn the other way before making off, and there, on her milking side, plain as print, will be your brand, T2D. You'll feel yourself rising right out of the saddle, and for a while you're floating in air. Then you'll remember all about her, and wonder how you ever forgot her. Then, touching Newchum with your heels, you'll shoot out and head her. She'll stand again, staring indignantly at you, and holding her head a lot higher. Then you'll address words of greeting to her, and like a big kid, ask her where her calf is. By inches, her tail will go up on the rising tide of excitement, then off she'll go again, this time with a snort. But you won't try to head her again, not just then. You'll be thinking of the calf. You'll know, of course, not being from the city, that a cow with a calf a few days old always puts it to sleep somewhere, after giving it a suck, same as your own mother used to do with yourself. That for a cradle she'll make use of the heads of fallen trees, or undergrowth, or long grass, and that when she sees the offspring curled up snug and comfortable, she strolls off to forage a mouthful for herself, and doesn't return to the spot until it's time for refreshments again. Or she gets word that the youngster has got out of bed and is in danger in some way. So, leaving her to herself, you'll start hunting round for the calf, riding steadily about, here, there, and everywhere, examining fallen timber, bushes, and the rim of the undergrowth. You'll shout into places and make all sorts of wild noises, and sometimes you'll get off and heave sticks to frighten the little devil out of his sleep, and give himself away. All the time the cow will be feeding, pretending she's not a bit interested in you, until you get cold and ride away from the hiding-place. Then she'll lift her head and stare at you as if she's getting afraid you'll find her offspring. But that'll be all bluff. And after a while, when hot, she won't lift her head at all, but watch you out of the corner of her eye, and she'll stop wagging her ears so as to catch every sound. And while you're hunting round, you'll come across a white cow that's been dead a couple of days. You'll stand looking at her corpse. Poor devil! Her legs will be stiff and pointing to the sun. She's had a calf, too, you can see, and the wild dogs have been at her. But a gentle breeze blowing from her will make even Newchum snort and swing round, and you'll let him go off his own way. Thinking of the calf again, you'll remember old Stopes telling you how he once induced a cow to find its calf by bellowing like one himself. So you'll hang Newchum up somewhere, and putting your hands to your mouth, you'll become a lost, lonely calf wanting its mother, until you get hoarse and thirsty. And every time you'll glance round, expecting to see the cow making in haste for the spot where her infant is, she'll be feeding in the same old spot, perhaps just going to lie down for a camp. That will try your temper, and feeling you'd like to have old Balaam to swear for you, you'll mount Newchum again and start driving the cow about, anywhere she likes to go, in hopes that she'll take it in her head to go where the calf is. But she'll go everywhere that the calf isn't, and after a while you'll feel nothing but a fool for letting yourself be made an ass of by a cow. The sun will be getting over a bit now, too, and it will sink pretty early in the Great Divide. You'll be sitting in the saddle, pulling at Newcham's mane, thinking and looking worried, when suddenly, from off the wind, away on the rim of the undergrowth, will come a couple of bellows with a lot of S.O.S. feeling in them. Then a hell of a move from the cow, and when you look in her direction, she'll be galloping her hardest for the undergrowth, roaring like murder. Then up from the gullies and down off the ridges will come other cattle, bellowing their hardest too, and kicking up a dust as if they were mobilizing for the next war. And while you're staring and wondering what all the hullabaloo is about, a red calf will come bounding blindly out of the undergrowth, bellowing as if the devil had hold of it, and behind it will be a white calf, hustled by a couple of dingoes. Laws, you won't want to know any more. For a furlong or so, you'll work overtime in the saddle, yelling to let the dogs know you're coming. But even before Newcham can cover the distance, there'll be a cordon of wild-eyed cattle formed round those calves, some of them with their heads down, snorting, and charging at the slinking dingoes. The yellow curs will tuck their bushy tails between their legs and side-bound them, and all you will see of them when you arrive on the scene is the whites of their eyes leering back over their shoulders at you as they disappear into the undergrowth. The commotion won't last long, and the mob will break rank and scatter themselves about. Then you'll make friends with the red cow with the white back, who'll be standing looking grateful and embracing the red calf, which has also a white back, and will be sucking at her eagerly and wagging its tail. You won't be sure of its gender at first glance, for at that age, with the woolly hair covering them, it's always hard to tell without handling whether calves are bulls or heifers. But while you'll be admiring the pair and figuring what the increase will be from them in 5 years or so, the white calf, who's been wasting time with a couple of old bullocks that he's mistaken for cows, will waddle over to your cow, and claiming her for his mother, will start sucking her on the offside and wagging his tail like 1 o'clock. At first you'll be amused, expecting him to get a kick on the jaw that'll knock him silly. But to your surprise, the cow will turn her head to him and start licking and caressing him. "Cripes!" you'll gasp. "It's hers, too! She's got twins!" Yet there's something about that calf that makes it hard for you to believe it's true. The colour, for one thing. Still, there he is, sucking away, and your cow mothering him. You'll look the other cattle over for a cow in milk and a likely mother, but nearly all of them will be old and dry and shrivelled, and no more likely to have calves than Chinamen. Your doubts about that calf's parentage will start to grow, and while you want to get rich as quick as anyone, knowing that lots got rich and became GSP by their cows having two and more calves, you won't want to risk going to jail. So you'll sit there in the saddle looking him over and over and pondering, when all in a second you'll get another brainwave. Why you didn't get it sooner will be your only wonder. That calf will belong to the dead cow lying in the gully. You'll see nothing in him now but a sure key to quod. So you'll slip between the little beggar and your cow and hoosh him away and crack the whip at him and race after him for 100 yards or so till the poor little brute, the life half scared out of him, will disappear over the head of the gully where his dead mother lies. Then you race back and hustle your cow and her legitimate calf off that flat and up the track leading round the lonesome mountain, at intervals looking back in fear the wretched orphan might be following. Safe on the top of the first climb, you'll spell for a moment to let them get their wind, so as not to knock the calf up too soon. You'll know, of course, that he'll knock up sooner or later, somewhere, before you get home, and that you'll have to carry him in front of you on the saddle, but you want him to walk as far as he can. Then, from out of the stillness and the solitude of the gully, away below, will come a plaintive cry from the abandoned motherless thing that will touch you in a soft spot. And when the cow, more humane than you and less selfish, hears it, she'll lift her head and answer back again and again, and will object to going further without him. Laws, what a criminal you'll feel all the rest of the way home! Next morning, when you and your dog rise and gather proudly round the new cow and calf, the cries of that helpless little quadruped that you left to starve out there on the Great Divide will still sound in your ears, and you'll wish he had perished with his mother, and that you had never seen him. End of chapter 18.